What's going on, everybody? Josh Wilson and new episode of the Big Dog Podcast. I'm really excited today. Got a really good friend of mine. It's funny, man. You know, the guest I have with me today, Doug Mitchell, we met earlier this year and like very first of the year. And you know, it's funny. A lot of my relationships right now came about quick, like out of nowhere. And Doug and I just met, clicked, and we've been doing life together ever since. We had a trip to Mexico together and see him in Dallas monthly, and just an amazing story, amazing journey. I'm excited to have Doug on here today. Doug is the CEO of Argenta. It's a direct sales organization that offers AT&T and solar products. He's a husband first and foremost and a father. He's a consultant. His specialty is building sales teams, and he's got a dope podcast called Building Great Sales Teams. So we got Doug with us this morning. What's going on, Doug?
What's going on, brother? It's an honor to be on your podcast here, man.
Man, thanks for joining me. I'm really excited about it. Before we jump in too deep, I got to tell everybody. So Doug's podcast is not only amazing, but he's mobile also when he needs to be. So tell everybody about the trailer, the podcast trailer.
Yeah, this thing is really sweet. So it must have been about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago, Patrick Bolanos, I don't know if you've had him on your show yet, but Patrick Bolanos put a picture of a podcast trailer that he was working on in our Facebook group. And I was like, man, the thing is sweet. You know, I was about, I want to say like 15 episodes in or so.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, it would be so awesome to be able to drive that thing up to Dallas, just hit up all my Apex buddies for podcasts. But not only that, you know, MDM and all the different events that we have going on. And then, yeah, like my office here in San Antonio, it's wide open, right? So the sound quality is not good, obviously, if I have a bunch of people in the office bouncing off the walls. Sure. So I like the idea of having a controlled studio. So anytime I interview anybody locally, I could just pull up the podcast studio and go, you know?
That's awesome.
The cameras are all set up. There's three angles. And of course there's a Rodecaster in there, and there's a couple of chairs. The background's awesome. And I don't know if you've been seeing some of the promo stuff we've been putting out for different episodes and stuff, but it's coming out clean.
That's cool.
Pretty excited about it. So Patrick put this out there and he's like, hey, I'm gonna start a little side hustle with this. You know, I'm going to let people record in it, charge them a fee or whatever. Sure. And so I reached out to him and I was like, are you going to be selling these? Like, are you going to be producing these or whatever? And he's like, yeah. And I said, I tell you what, I'll buy this one right here and right now. If you give me the one you're currently working on, cause I know he has like a 6 month wait on all his stuff, you know? Yeah. And so he agreed to it. So I was able to get it. We used it at MDM. We shot 7 episodes. Plus we shot a bunch of my salespeople and stuff. So we've just been using the crap out of it every time we can, and it's been awesome.
That's really cool. I love it. I thought it was really unique, thought it was super smart, and it's perfect, you know, for you, and particularly being in San Antonio. You can just run up the road. I mean, what is it, like 5 hours to Dallas, probably?
Yeah, four and a half, five hours.
Yeah. So, you know, but still super doable, and you can make great use of it. And then, you know, other purposes as well. So really cool, really unique. Did Patrick do the rap on it also?
Yeah, I think he outsources that, but they did it all in-house.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so for those of you who don't know, and we'll get Patrick on here for sure, but he is the trailer king, and it's food trucks and trailers, and obviously podcast trailers. But it's incredible stuff. You got to check him out on Instagram. It's really, really cool. And it's one of the things I really love about his business and watching his story and their growth over the last several years is literally he's helping people take these visions and these dreams, you know, and flip them into a reality. And some people had restaurants, you know, going into COVID, you know, and then they had to shut down or whatever reason, and they went mobile. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Some of them have a little food cart or something like that, or they're just slinging stuff out of coolers, you know, in the back of their truck. And they have this vision, and he takes it and brings it to reality.
Yeah.
And they're so unique and they're so specialized. What a cool thing to do, you know, day in and day out. Pretty wild.
I don't know if, I don't know if you've ever visited his shop, but they literally bring in the pipe, you know what I'm saying? And they build those things from the ground up. There's not a piece of that. Yeah, they're fabricating the whole thing. It's so cool to watch him work too. He's got a lot of talented people in there for sure.
That's amazing. So look, so Doug, sorry, I ran us straight down the rabbit hole of the podcast trailer. It was on my mind, man. Tell us about, you know, you. Who's Doug Mitchell? Who's everybody hearing from today?
So I'm your typical, like, could not hold on to a job when I was younger. I'm not a good employee, right? And so right when I got into the workforce when I was 18, I moved from San Antonio, Texas to Corpus Christi with about $200 and my Ford Ranger that was paid off. You know, my aunt, which is kind of like my mom, had given it to me. And from then on, for the next like 18 months, I must have went through like 11 or 12 different positions, got fired from most of them for telling the manager or the supervisor or the boss how to do his job. And then I finally landed working in real estate. And the way that I did that is I was doing mobile detailing. I had my own little mobile detailing business.
Yeah.
And I actually had a FedEx contract with that, surprisingly enough. But anyways, I was... FedEx
truck tightened up?
Yeah, I was cleaning all the FedEx trucks as they came in at the end of the day.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so that kind of paid the bills. And then all the mobile detailing was the extra money, right? And so I was detailing for this realtor in town, and I didn't know it at the time, but he was the biggest realtor in town, right? And I was detailing his BMW 550i or Li, right? So this is like the big wide body whale looking car, right? And you know, I guess he liked my hustle because he you know asked if I was interested in a position with his company, and so basically I was going to be able to do the mobile detailing and handle that position at the same time. It was like entry-level photography for the houses and then putting up signs and all that good stuff. And so that was kind of my first time working for an entrepreneur and kind of being able to see him work. And every now and then I would drive him places and stuff like that. I was a gopher. They needed to run contracts. You know, I was doing everything that was inconvenient, basically.
Sure.
And so, a couple of months into it, I got an opportunity. Their marketing manager was quitting. He had already taught me how to do some stuff on the computer with the marketing and everything. So he kind of put me through a 2-week crash course. And then I was the marketing manager for 300 listings with his real estate company.
Okay.
So yeah, he was all about like training from the ground up. You know, obviously you get them cheaper that way.
Yeah, sure.
And so, so that was kind of, you know, my introduction to marketing. And so I learned how to do all that stuff. I worked for him, I want to say for about 2 years. And then he moved over to Houston, started leasing and building high rises.
Oh, wow.
Big success over in Houston. And so he laid me off and I stayed in Corpus Christi, right? And so I started doing my own marketing then, which brought me across the desk of my previous partner, which ended up hiring me as a marketing manager, right? And he had a sales organization. He had about 4 or 5 different businesses, but one of them was collectible gold sales. And so I did the newspaper campaigns for that. And that was a crazy business, you know? So we would advertise 1 ounce of bullion gold, right? And then these people that were interested in that would call in, they would get their ounce, and then we would upsell them on collectible gold. So it was kind of like... Not really a bait and switch because you could get your 1 ounce, right?
Sure.
They always try to upsell them on, you know, like a mint state proof 70 set of American Eagles, you know?
Right. Right.
So this is a whole other business that a lot of people don't know about. Right. And it's just like baseball cards. They're graded, you know, they have intrinsic value and all that good stuff. So I started, you know, I did marketing for him and I worked for him. I should say on and off because he did fire me once and then brought me back. Apparently taking
30,000. Hey, so we're tracking, right?
We're tracking right on point here. Apparently taking $30,000 worth of gold out of the office to get it photographed and then bringing it back.
Oh, yeah.
Is frowned upon. I could have been jacked, I guess. You know?
Who knew?
You know, I was 22 and I was just figuring it out, you know?
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, I did a lot of cool things at that company, but you know, the most important thing is I worked for a serial entrepreneur and I saw him operate and I kind of learned by osmosis from him. And then he would sit me down in his office and we'd walk through things and stuff like that. And he would be pouring into me at different levels. So I learned a lot what to do and what not to do from him. You know, his, I always noticed his relationships with his top salespeople were always strained, you know? And so I did my best to insulate those relationships and make sure that they were conducive to the bottom line of the company. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
And so after a while, one of his salespeople convinced him to start Argenta Field Solutions, which was a dealership for AT&T that did door-to-door sales, right?
Okay.
And his salesman dipped after like 3 months of managing it. You know, he got another person to manage it, didn't work out. So eventually he was like, well, Doug, why don't we give you a shot? You think you can manage a door-to-door sales company? I'm like, sure, why not? Let's do it. Yeah. And so about 6 months into it, I got it to black. We started making a little profit. I think it was like $5,000 a month, nothing crazy, right? And he decided he wanted to sell it. I was able to obtain owner financing from him to purchase it.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, 3 years later, you know, we did $5 million in commissions with AT&T. And I think at the time we were doing ADT as well.
Okay.
And I had over 110 salespeople.
Wow.
So that was from 23 to 26 years old. So that was a bit of a wild ride.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you were blowing hard to take it from, you know, after 6 months, $5,000 a month profit to putting $5 million plus up in commissions a year.
I mean, when I took over, we had one manager in Houston and then no salespeople because I had just fired them all because they were all like, smoking weed every day in the car instead of knocking doors. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And so I had to figure all that out.
They might have been selling something, but not what you were
pushing. Yeah, exactly. Right. And so I had to get rid of all of them and just start from scratch. And I mean, the first, so, you know, one of the things in the sales world is, right, you always lead from the front. The typically the leader is the best salesperson in the group, but that was never really me.
Yeah.
I sold for 3 months. I nailed down a script. I nailed down training. I understood what it took to train a new salesperson. So I did that. And then I was able to promote one of them to trainer. And so now they did the training. And now I was able to actually manage the office. You know,
yeah.
Of course, I was doing everything. I was doing payroll, taxes, operations, you know, dealing with the client, escalations, reconciles, all that good stuff. Right. And then I was doing the daily meetings, the sales meetings and all that. And then shortly after that, I met Wayne Skinner. He was a seasoned manager, brought him into the fold. And that's when we started really scaling and really blowing it up. So
that's awesome. And so that ran you through 23 to 26. That's when you really made that big gap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
And so during that time, Family Guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many kids did you have during that time?
Three during that time. Actually, funny story. Whenever I decided I wanted to buy the business, I brought it to my brand new wife with my 3-month-old daughter at the time. And, you know, she was just starting to get a paycheck for teaching.
Yeah.
And, because she was in between. Well, yeah, she was getting a check already. And so she, you know, we're pillow talk or whatever. And we're talking about it. And she looks over at me dead serious and was like, I don't want you to do this. You have a good job right now. You got a steady paycheck. We got a 3-month-old daughter. We're finally going to get a little bit ahead. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And so then I went in the next day and I told Troy I'm in.
Hey, look, that's so funny because I think about, you know, back in the day, I say it, you know, real estate and finance was my background and I was a mortgage loan officer and paid attention to everything that was always going on and got a wild hair. I'm like, man, I can do this on my own. You know, I'll start my own shop and do this. And we did. And so I remember similar conversations, similar period of time with Devin. And we had just bought a new house. We had, she was teaching at the time. She was pregnant with our son, Logan. And I'm like, babe, I think it's time for us to go out on our own. She's like, wait, huh? What? I was like, yeah, I think it's a good time. And everybody, everybody. I mean, you know the deal. Everyone's like, man, you can't do that. You got a wife. You're about to have a baby. You just got this house. You know, you can't do all these things. She never told me that. I mean, she was hesitant. She was concerned and nervous. And I'm kind of like you. It's just like the blinders are on. And I'm dialed in and focused on just the task at hand. And I was like, hey, we know the task. We know the route. We may not know all the steps necessary, but we're going to figure that out. We're confident. How young and dumb, right?
Yeah.
During those times. But I don't know. I think some of the best lessons we got in life were because we were young and dumb, unfortunately. But maybe fortunately, you know, it just depends on how you look at it. But that was the same similar time. And we made the decision. I quit that job where we were killing it, and we figured it out. And it was great until it wasn't.
Right.
It was awesome until it wasn't. And then I had to figure it out because it was kind of like a big old FU from everybody who's like, we told you so. You know, now what? We told you not to do that. We told you to just go get that safe job. We told you to keep that opportunity, you know, not make that risk. You got a family, you got this and that. So talk a little bit about that, you know, how, so you go do it anyway.
Yeah.
Right. And then, obviously you're having success on the business side.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, how does that trajectory go?
Not well, unfortunately. So I'm having all the success on the business side. Right. And so from a young age, I had a chip on my shoulder. You know, my dad wasn't really around. He was an alcoholic, passed away when I was 18 or 19. And I maybe spent one or two summers with him, and my grandmother mainly took care of me.
Okay.
And so my mom also, you know, I had somewhat of a normal childhood, you know, early on. And then somewhere around middle school, my sister got pregnant. My mom and my stepdad were in the middle of a separation and eventual divorce. And so my aunt kind of plucked me out of there, right?
Okay.
And then just to make a long story short, my mom didn't really, you know, she called me. She's like, okay, this is what we're doing. All right. And she was okay with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, when I think about today and I think about my three kids, you know what I mean? Someone saying, hey, any one of them saying, hey, I'm going to go live with my tia, you know, it's like,
right.
I would lose my shit.
Well, yeah. And so dad was, I know he passed, you know, late teens, but he was out of the picture early on.
Yeah. I mean, he was a truck driver. Your typical stereotype Texas boy, drove trucks, you know what I mean? Had a bunch of kids everywhere, that type of deal. So I had a chip on my shoulder, you know, these people that were supposed to want me didn't want me. My aunt, you know, kind of taught me responsibility, taught me how to be an adult and everything, but obviously she can't fill that void. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
And so it kind of drove me early on to prove that, you know, and then I saw my extended family, aunts, uncles, and cousins and all that. And everybody's just kind of like accepting average. Right.
Right.
And so I didn't want to be like them, you know, and I knew I had something special. I didn't know what it was. I knew I was going to be different. Right. Okay. And I just, maybe it was just the chip on my shoulder telling me that. Right. And so, I attacked, you know, the business, and I attacked being, you know, working for these other people. You know, I was always kind of an incredibly hard worker, and I put everything I had into my business.
Sure.
And so when I had success, it was like, okay, I accomplished this. You know what I mean? I've got the thriving business. I've got the wife and three kids, the perfect family. You know what I'm saying? I played rugby at the time, did well in rugby. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like I'm accomplishing all these things, and then, you know, it's just not enough. You know, not being content. Right. And so at the time I was traveling the country, I had 13 offices nationwide. And, you know, I did what every cliche successful, you know, businessman does. And I was unfaithful in my marriage, you know?
Okay.
And so I played that game for about 2 years. Like a year and a half or so. And then, you know, I got involved in, my wife's uncle's church, right?
Okay.
And so through that, I was convicted. And one day I was standing on the church stage or whatever, and I was supposed to give my testimony. And I had a strong conviction from God that, hey, you can't be up here giving this testimony. You know what I mean? If you're doing what you're doing, you know, when you're traveling for business, you know, I was able to compartmentalize everything.
Yeah.
So somehow I was able to attend church, pray, all these things, and still be doing what I was doing when I was going out of town, because that was when I was out of town, right?
Yeah, it's a separate thing. Yeah.
And so it was something from my childhood. I was able to compartmentalize my mom, compartmentalize my dad, you know what I mean? Compartmentalize my sister so that I could operate and I could function like a normal human being, you know what I'm saying?
Right, in the moment.
In the moment. So I did the same things when I got older as an adult. And so I was convicted. I finally stopped doing that stuff. And so life got a lot better for the next year and a half. The business had its up and downs. It struggled. I pretty much stayed in between 2.5 and 3.5 million for 5 years after that. Right. And, you know, I was able to do a lot of different things in business and doing well and everything. But, you know, what was noticeable is my family life got so much better. You know, I was able to actually start being present with my kids and start pouring into my relationship with my wife, right? But I still hadn't told her everything that I did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think this was back in 18, near the end of 18. She came across an old email. There wasn't a whole lot of incriminating stuff in it, but at the end of the day, I was holding on to all this stuff. So I just let it all loose on her all at once. I told her everything, you know? And obviously even the strongest women aren't ready for that. You know,
absolutely. Yep.
And so we separated, eventually divorced, but we were really good co-parents. You know, we kept the kids 50-50. I did everything I could to make sure that they were set up, made sure I made my payments on time, did not go through the state child support office or anything like that. I wasn't going to have the state tell me to take care of my family. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And so over the next couple of years, you know, we attempted to reconcile a few times. And after about 3 years, she was in a relationship. I was in a relationship, and she was praying one night and got her conviction from God. You know what I mean? That she wasn't happy in her current relationship and that she was still in love with me and that she had finally forgiven me, you know?
Wow.
And once she did that, the blinders were off, the veil was lifted, you know what I mean? But I was still in a relationship. And so I had been through this a few times. So I was like, okay, you're not going to trick me again into this. You know what I mean? Every time I try and come back, you shut me out, you know, because you hadn't forgiven me yet. So I didn't believe her. So I continued on my relationship, which eventually didn't work out. And then a couple of months after that, she asked me on a date to a wedding. And I was like, what could it hurt?
Right.
And she was wearing this dress and she still wears it every now and then. And she was just a smoke show that night, and it was over for me. Was over. I was done. She had, you know, and she had waited 6 months. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like
basically broken up with her boyfriend at the time. You know what I mean? And hadn't dated or anything for 6 months waiting for me, you know? So, which was a huge testament in itself to the power of her faith. And then the power of the love that she had for me, even after everything that I had done. Right.
Yeah.
And so when we did come back together, it was like fireworks again. And so we, in about 26 days, we'll be getting, remarried.
Yeah. That's so amazing, man. Like I love that story. I love the journey. I love that I got to witness the proposal.
Yeah, that was really cool.
You know, so I mentioned at the start of the podcast that Doug and I and a group of friends and friends now at this point, a lot of them, we had no clue who the heck they were when we got.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's some really, really just solid, amazing relationships that were formed out of that. And ours got stronger. And, you know, I got to meet Alicia for the first time and that was great. And I remember you telling me when we first got there, you're like, dude, I'm proposing while we're here. And obviously you're like, oh, hell yes. Like, this is great. I'm looking around and guys, you got to know, like, I'll just try to set this up for you as best as possible. And maybe Jonathan, and you don't got to jump on the mic, Jonathan, I'm going to send you some pictures of this. So when this show launches, maybe we can overlay them in the video and show people who are watching. But one of the houses, we had what, 3-4 houses there in Cabo?
Yeah, I think it was 4 houses total.
Yeah, and there's these beautiful homes that we rented for the weekend and, you know, on the cliffs of Pedregal in Cabo, overlooking Cabo and the ocean. It's just the scene is unimaginable unless you're in it.
It still doesn't look real when I look at pictures and video of it. I'm like, no way you're there.
Yeah. It's just, and this is someone's normal. It wasn't my normal, but hey, I was willing to be a part of it for a bit. But they ended up setting up just this beautiful scene, and we'll post some pictures here, but it just was, there were probably what, 40 of us, you know, there.
Yeah, something like
and
that,
yeah. Music's playing, and you know, you walk her up and there's beautiful flowers and candles everywhere. And you know, it just, man, you freaking proposed. We knew it was a done deal. And how embarrassing, man, how bad would it have been if it was like, nah, I'm still thinking about you, Joker.
Yeah. Dude, after I just took her to Cabo and we were already living together for a year. She's like,
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Nah.
We could have done this at home. We don't need to do this right here. But no, dude, it was really special and it was amazing. And to see like the love you guys have for each other is amazing. And I think y'all's story is super inspiring on that part. And your kids are awesome. And, you know, the work that you guys put into each other is awesome. It's very evident and you see it. And it's an honor to know you guys and to share that little part, that little moment of your guys' journey is super special for me. And I know for everybody else who was there too.
Yeah, it really was. And I appreciate that. You know, I wouldn't be okay if I didn't, you know, talk about the impact that Apex had on that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's because I was surrounded by all these amazing men like yourselves and all the other men that we're surrounded by. And they're telling me kind of their strategies for life, you know?
Yeah.
And whether it's like, okay, I don't need to go to this after hours thing, you know what I mean? Or it's, I'm going to fly home, you know, on the red eye just so I can, you know, I can get one less night away from home, you know, all these different strategies that they gave me, you know, and following the G code and doing 75 hard, all these disciplines, because, you know, being single and being out in, you know, the world without your family with you half the time, you lose all your discipline, you lose your motivation. And so, you know, when I joined Apex, I was able to dial that stuff back in and I was able to do that work with her and get back to that place. And of course, you know, you know, as you know, when we go to these masterminds, our time is very limited to do anything, but you know, the mastermind events, right?
Yeah.
We have plenty of times to network and stuff like that. And we don't want to miss any of that.
Sure.
But I had kind of called Tyler and I was like, hey, and Tyler Dozier, he's the one that, you know, puts on all this stuff and plans everything. He's Ryan Steumann's event coordinator. And I'm sure he has some fancy title now because he just pulled off one of the biggest masterminds in history. But
yeah, the guy's a legend.
He's a legend now. We're just going to call him legend.
That's right.
But anyway, I reach out to him. I'm like, hey, I just wanted you to know, I don't want to detract from the event, but we're probably not going to be at the dinner. I think it was Saturday night.
Yeah.
We're probably not going to be at the dinner Saturday night because I'm going to slip away and I'm going to propose to Alicia. You know, he knew our whole story and everything.
Right.
And he was like, okay, let me get back to you. And I'm like, no, Tyler, like, I'm not asking y'all to do anything.
Right.
You know, I don't want y'all to spend a dollar on anything. I just, you know, wanted to let you know because I'm not proposing in Cabo. You know
right. Yeah. I mean? Right.
Like, all we got to do is go down to the beach and we got this amazing setting or whatever. I was going to hire a local photographer and, you know, coordinated that way. So I was asking him for some contacts and stuff. And so maybe like 2 hours later, he's like, we got you. I talked to Ryan. We're going to take care of the whole thing. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, I feel so guilty. You
right. Know
what I mean?
Yeah.
And then we get there and Tyler pulls me over and I'm talking to him about it. It's like, dude, y'all really don't need to do all this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to detract from the mastermind.
Yeah.
You know, I just felt like it would be like, oh, look at me, you know? And he sits me down and he's like, look, you went through this journey with us and you said it yourself that Apex was a big part of y'all coming back together. So we just want to share this with you. You know what I mean? And so once he kind of explained it to me that way, then I was like, okay, let's do it. And they knocked it out of the park. I mean, all you have to do is see the one picture of me proposed and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, Doug just ruined it for the rest of us.
Yeah.
if we still got to propose.
I was hesitant to tell my wife about that. We just celebrated 20 years last week.
Oh, that's amazing.
And 2 weeks ago, I'm sorry. And 2 weeks ago today. because two of our dearest friends, they got married 2 weeks after us. And one of them's out in Catalina Island in California celebrating their 20th today. And the others are up in Nantucket celebrating this weekend. And, you know, so 20 years ago, though, you know, we got married and my proposal was not as grand. I will tell you that right now. Oh. I think about it and I'm like, what in the hell is going on? Like, I think about how I did that and what I did. And good thing she just saw potential in me. I mean, God, I want to lose. It was so, it was shameful. We were, so for our 20th, I got her a band, a new band to commemorate. And it's a very pretty ring, very beautiful. And she was very excited about it. She's never really wanted me to mess with the original configuration and stone and all that.
The good ones are like that.
Yeah, man, you know, that's it. And so I got this new band and I'm looking at this band and I'm like, holy crap. Like, there's several stones in this new band. There's quite a few stones in this new band. And I'm like, oh my gosh, her original solitaire, like the one stone, is the size of one of these in this band that she's wearing. And I'm like, well, that's a decent kind of, you know, upgrade there, babe. This is all right. I said, see, improvement. Hopefully we're getting better. That's getting better. Mm-hmm. You know, everything's growing. But it's just funny because I look at it and I remember that time vividly. And I remember that proposal and I remember that engagement. And I think about the highs over the 20 years. And I also think about the lows and where we've had issues and ran into things. But we're always on this path and journey trying to work together to improve and grow and figure it out. And it's just, it's like the process, you know, 20 years doesn't come easy. 2 years doesn't come easy. You know, it's a process and everybody's just got to be on it together, right? One of those things. Oh, we got Jonathan. Is he muted on our end or on Doug's?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, there we go. We got you.
I'm assuming y'all can cut this if y'all need to. My battery's getting low for whatever reason. My adapter's not working.
So. Oh, weird. We got you. We'll figure it out.
9%.
No worries. So the Apex piece is super interesting with how it plays in, and it's like, hey, you know, we've been through this journey with you, and you know, we're a part of this end, and it, nobody felt a distraction at all, brother. Like, it was like your family was there with you. And it was just, it was an incredibly, you know, powerful moment. And it's really cool to see. So what'd you say, 27 days, 26 days?
Yeah. So July 25th, which is a Monday, we'll go back to Corpus Christi where we originally got married. And we'll do a small ceremony at our old church there with our old pastor that originally married us.
Oh, man, and that's awesome.
And then July 30th, we're going to do a barbecue in the Hill Country. And basically we're going to have a party and, you know, invite all of our family and friends and celebrate the reunion.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
So it's funny. You were talking about like with these masterminds that you're a part of and we share, you know, being a part in a couple and there's a couple that we're not in together. But one point that you made that I think is really key for people to think about in their own lives and personal lives. It's like there's seasons where you can go hard like that and you can, you know, do that extended day and drop meetings on the front end or the back end of the masterminds or things like that. But there's certain times too, where you got to know, hey, you were talking about getting that red eye. So you have one less night, you know, away, you know, I fly out. Are you going to be in Dallas Friday?
Yeah, I'll be in or Fort Worth.
Yeah. That's where we're going this time. So I'll fly in. I think I get in 8:45 tomorrow night. I'm not leaving Virginia till 5:30.
Yeah.
And then I'll walk out of the meeting in Fort Worth on Friday and I'm straight to the airport.
Yeah.
I fly out at 7:00. I'm back in my bed by midnight and, you know, with my wife and, you know, and my son. My daughter's out in California with Grammy. But, you know, that's earlier in the year, the first 4 months of the year. No, I was out there for 3 or 4 days.
Same.
You know, doing podcasts, doing meetings, you know, new projects that we're working on. And I was like, okay, this is pushing a little hard,
right?
You know, let me dial back. We came out with my wife for the first time for MDM, and we brought a bunch of the team. So we were out there for almost a week that week because we had a lot of stuff built around it. But she was with me, so it was great. You know, but this is a quick trip. August. I think we've got Apex Live the day before. So I'll be out for a couple of days and we're looking at trying to, I might have the Devin and the kids may come out a couple of days after that Friday. Cause we actually got a condo out there in Frisco. And so move-in day is that same weekend. So, I'm going to bring them out to check it out because the kids haven't even seen it yet. So we'll get them a spot to check out. But it's like I'm trying to figure out, hey, how can I incorporate them into this time and have them involved so it's not just me gone all the time, even though they get it and they understand and supportive. But if I start feeling like this is getting too normal, that's when for me I know, hey, I got to dial it back.
Right.
And I need some more of that time at home. And you kind of went through a similar process the last month or two.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that a little bit. Cause I think people just get stuck in the race and push, right. push, and they let other things fall to the wayside. So do you mind talking about that a little bit?
Yeah, cause I thought some of the
stuff you shared on social was really important.
So, you know, there's a lot to unpack there, but basically once I started getting into, Apex and masterminds in general, and just around all of a sudden I had all these like-minded people around me and I hadn't had them my whole life, you know?
Yeah.
And, I'm 36 years old now. So I found Apex when I was 35, you know, about 15 years too late. Right. So I don't even think it was around back then, but I wasn't around a lot of other business owners, you know, and I never got to scratch that itch. So when I finally did and I found MDM 21, right. And I joined Apex. I was all in. Yeah. And I mean all in. And I went to everything, right? Every live event, every fly-in Friday, you know, the Goon Squad had events. I did Apex Evolution, you know, and I did a few private flights with Ryan Stuman and his crew. And so I was constantly, you know, I had 1 6-week period a couple months ago where I was traveling 6 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
You know? And about 3 months into all this, 6 months of just crazy travel in the beginning of 22, I had already been feeling it. I was like, wait a second, you know, I'm not home running my business. I'm not home pouring into my family enough. Right.
Yeah.
And so I decided the last 6 months of 22, I would get rid of a lot of the stuff that I had planned and then start doing that type of stuff. Like we talked about earlier, you know?
Yeah.
Flying Fridays, I typically, you know, we've got the dinner this Thursday or whatever, and I wanted to be there for that. But I typically fly in the morning of and leave that evening.
Yeah.
I don't have one night away from home, right? I'm also in an RBO mastermind. And same thing there. I fly in as late as possible and leave as early as possible, right?
Right.
And I just made a commitment to Alicia and the kids that I wouldn't be traveling so much. Now, I also had to make sure that they were aligned with what I was doing. They needed to understand, hey, when dad goes on these trips, he's either working, you know, like MDM was, I was working the whole time. Oh, I barely got to sit in the seat, you know what I mean? Because we were handing out energy drinks, we were recruiting,
right.
You know, we were qualifying people for solar, you know, we were doing all kinds of stuff. And I was doing podcasts and everything. And luckily Alicia was able to come in and spend some of that time with me as well and experience that too. But anyways, I had to make sure my kids were aligned and that they knew when I was leaving, you know, just like they go to school, I go to school, right? And that's why I fly out every month, once a month or twice a month, sometimes when it's the RBO mastermind as well. And, you know, I show them the pictures and I help them understand how this helps me be a better leader in my business, you know? And so there's two things there. There's alignment. And then there's also just not overdoing it. Like you said earlier, where you're out of town 3 or 4 nights every month. And then we also have our own, I mean, you have several locations, you know what I mean? I have 2 offices. Right. I have to go to Corpus. I have to go to Houston.
Yep.
And, so it's on top of all that travel as well, you know, and it'll wear on any family, the strongest family. So you got to make 100%. Sure the alignment's there and that the travel is absolutely limited. And then you're also keeping your disciplines when you're traveling. You know, I find it's actually easier for me to keep my disciplines when I'm traveling, because when I'm home, I want to, you know, watch movies with the kids and stay up too late with the wife. You know what I mean? So it's like, I find when I'm traveling, I actually dial it in a little more.
Oh man, good for you, because I'm the exact opposite of that. Like we had, I had a 7-8 week stretch similar to what you were talking about, mm-hmm. where I'm in Detroit, I'm in Milwaukee, I'm in San Antonio, I'm in Austin, mm-hmm. I'm in Dallas, I'm in Virginia, I'm back to Dallas, San Antonio. I mean, I'm all over the place, all work. And it's like, and this was May timeframe, into April, into May. And I had come into this year and really hit a really good routine. And then all these trips, and it was messing me up. I'm still getting to the gym, but it wasn't right. Yeah. I'm still trying to do stuff. It's not right. And I'm very like systematic. So when mm-hmm. I'm here, it's like, okay, I'm eating this at this time. I'm eating that. Like
right.
everything's just ready. I have not mastered that on the road yet. And that's one of the reasons why we got the place in Frisco, is like when I'm there, I just want it to be like my normal. It's like my here in right. Virginia, boom, it's there. I'm going to have the same type of food sitting in the fridge. I'm going to have mm-hmm. it's done. And we just signed up a handful of our team into entrepreneurs. And so they're
nice.
Going to be coming out quarterly. And so we're actually throwing on all my head trainers and stuff are going to be a part of that. And mm-hmm. so they'll come out, you know, quarterly. That's when they have their meetings. We have our monthly meetings, but I'll be going out on their quarterly meetings also. But we're going to be bringing, since everybody from around the country is going to be in one spot, we're going to throw in quarterly head trainer meetings and nice. Do those like the day before.
Yeah.
But now it's helped to keep the routine to space that I can enjoy with the family also. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the hotel grind, you know, right. all the time. And but it's figuring out what works for you, what works with your family. One of the things mm-hmm. you shared was, hey, I'm sharing stuff with my kids. These pictures of people I'm meeting, stuff I'm doing, things I'm learning. This is how it helps me. And that's a huge part. You know, I feel like you're missing a big opportunity there with your family if you're not doing that, because all the kids see is something's more important than right. me.
Yeah.
And so whereas if you can help bring it around to that why, and they have buy-in and understand, now they might not always feel excited about it when you go, but when you get back, they're excited. But it's, hey, what did you learn?
Yeah.
Did you meet anybody cool? Like, mm-hmm. What did you get to experience? And yeah. that's what my kids are a little older, a good amount older than yours. My son will be 18 in December. You know, Kiki's 15. Mm-hmm. And they'll ask that. So what was this one about? Who was the speaker, you know, this right. time? Or, you know, what were the challenges? Or, you know, they're just thinking about it from a different way, but they understand why it's important to us as a unit that we go and do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I want Logan to get involved as soon as he graduates. You know, I want him to start coming out and doing the deal and being around it and a part of it. I just think it's so important to get that outside influence from people who are ahead of you.
Yeah,
you know? Absolutely. It's not the same path necessarily, but winning's winning. And, you know, it doesn't matter what game you're playing, winning's winning. And you have to get around those people. You just have to do it.
Well, and there's so many types of people with so many different skills.
Yep.
And they've all they're all lean, especially in executives. I think we see it more than the other groups, just because, you know, the fee to get in, right? They're sure. all leaning into their passions, and they're not wasting yep. time with stuff they're not good at. They're not wasting time living a life that doesn't fulfill them.
Yeah, agree.
You know, and hopefully our kids see that with us, but for them to see it from 100, 200 other like-minded people just opens up a world of possibilities.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, this certain route or this certain skill or this certain way of life, you know what I mean? Or this certain exercise program or any of that. We're all doing different stuff, you know?
Yep. And the thing that I think is so big about that with everybody's individual skills and being dialed in on what they're passionate on and not being distracted by everything else that's out there. Mm-hmm. I think a couple of years ago when I joined, that's what made it okay for me to just focus on the dogs.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, man, I'm not really doing nothing. It's just these dogs. we're doing something, you know, and it's okay. That shiny object, you know, syndrome. Oh, what's that? What's that?
Yeah.
And, but it doesn't matter. That's their wheelhouse. That's their passion.
Right.
That's not mine. Now, I appreciate the ones who created opportunities for me to be involved yeah. without having to worry about it.
Without having to spend an hour on it. I love those.
Yeah, those are my
favorite. I'm getting people. Checks every month for those. I love those.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so I was talking to somebody the other day. I'd posted something and my buddy messaged me and goes, he's like, what's this? I said, we might be in the chicken business. He's like, man, shut the hell up. I knew anytime you post something obscure like this, and he was referencing me and another friend of ours. He goes, anytime you and him post something, I'm like, man, what are they messing with right now? And it's, you know, don't have to worry about it. Let the experts worry about it and do yeah. their thing. And it's from those relationships though, right?
Yeah.
And putting yourself out there and learning and having conversations and connecting and always looking to strive. Yeah, strive to grow.
I just got back from Utah and I was at the RBO mastermind. And there's only 25 of us in it right now. They just opened it back up and I think they're going to get it to 50 before the next quarter. But
oh, cool.
They're being super picky about it. And I appreciate it. But we were at Wags Capital, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's where our first day meeting was. And then the next day we were at Wags Airplane Hangar. That's where our second day meeting was. And they were kind of telling the story of how they met Wags, which was through Arete. And then it was this like a group of only 100 that had to pay, I think it was like $100,000 to get in.
Yeah.
And they've since gotten rid of that group, but they were talking about how they didn't even do any business with them initially, but it was like a year later that they started doing investments with them, you know?
Right.
And it was very much that thing, like you said, hey, here's my money. You're the expert. You know yep. what I mean? You go make it happen and then you get a check. You know yep. what I'm saying? And your money grows, you know?
And how was that? How was that headquarters?
Oh, Wags Capital. Amazing. the art he's got on the wall alone, the pictures were so cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody was just, you know, you expect, and I'm still not getting used to this, right? You expect, you know, when you're a kid, you expect someone that makes that grosses $1 million a year to be a certain way. And yep. then you expect someone that does 50 million a year to be a certain way. And then you expect someone that does 100 million a year to be a certain way. Well, it turns out once you start aligning yourself with people in Apex or people in the RBO mastermind, it turns out all their friends are just as cool. You know what I mean? Oh, wow. And it really, I was sitting there watching Wags. He came in that morning. He wasn't part of our day that day. He just came in to get his plane and fly out, you know, and it was a, you know, one of those little four seater yep. planes, but he flies it himself, which yeah. is so cool. You know? So he walks in, he's like changing the oil. You know what I mean? He's in basketball shorts and tennis shoes, you know, just hanging out. He got some coffee with us or whatever. And then, you know, he flies off to a meeting.
Yeah, sure. You know, you got to do as one would do.
Yeah, as naturally we all do when we got right. a meeting out of state.
You know? I don't count on myself to check the oil in my truck right. You know, I don't.
I'm the same way.
I don't
way.
Know about that.
He was.
I'm
he
good
was
at finding good people to do stuff.
Yeah, he was checking all his instruments. And that's one of the things I appreciated so much. I was just like, man, okay, first off, let's not front. Wags is rich as fuck, right?
Right, yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah, sure.
And then he's sitting there like, changing his oil in his plane. I just appreciated that so much, you know.
Yeah, it's cool.
You can tell he genuinely enjoys that. So that was
The planes are a passion for sure. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's cool. I was following. I was kind of having FOMO on social media, seeing the
as
stuff
we all do,
and what was going on. So that was pretty cool. I was glad to see that you were out there and doing that. So, look, man, I want to honor your time. We got a little bit of time left, and we've been talking family and life and stuff, and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about, you know, what's going on with the business. What are you excited about right now? What are you working on? I mean, I know that you're helping people develop their sales teams. Like that is a gift of yours, you know, something. How lucky are you to be passionate about a gift that you have? So many people don't have that. And so that's great. I know you've got that going on. I know the business is growing, but what's next? What's got you fired up right now?
So, you know, I'll be transparent here. So I got into the consulting heavy, you know, I did it for free for a while just to figure out my process and my system. Right.
Yeah.
Once I got that dialed in, then I started charging and, I helped about four or five different people in their businesses, and they're rolling now, right? And fulfilled my obligations there. And then I had to stop because I realized that the solar side of my business was struggling a little bit on the ops side, which is my specialty, right? So I got into the ops. We got that rolling. You know, we're doing about 20 a month on the solar side, which is great. You know, we only started about 9 months ago in solar at all. Now, before that, it was all AT&T. And so, you know, with the time left, I would like to tell this little story here because it is incredibly important to what's going on with me right now. So I've been in the AT&T business for 12 years now, door to door. And then we switched over to a referral-based model we call MDU. And all that is the salespeople, instead of going door to door, they go to the leasing agents in apartment complexes, develop relationships with them, and then they get referrals from them. And then they send them kickbacks for the referrals. And so it's a great model, and it's been working really well for us. And it's a low maintenance model. You know, Wayne and I were able to develop solar because MDU, we had a director on that side, and it was doing really well.
Nice.
And so, you know, unfortunately, I had to terminate that director a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
And it's tough because when you give someone the reins like that, And then all of a sudden you have to cut them loose, you're not developed in that business anymore. You're not privy to the sales process necessarily. You know what I mean? You can pick it up and figure it out, which I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
But that was a tough decision to make. Unfortunately, he was, you know, no longer living by our core values. Right. And the one that he kind of stopped living by was operating with integrity.
Yeah.
And so, you know, unfortunately, we had to let go of him and another staff member because of some personal stuff that they had going on. And they did it in front of the company. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He's married, so you can kind of tell what I'm getting at there.
Yep. Yep.
And so without getting into that too much, you know, a couple of days later, we had to make that decision. And, you know, I didn't want to take away the guy's livelihood. So I set him up with a contract with AT&T. So
sure.
He's doing that. And obviously, he recruited some of our salespeople from the MDU side.
Sure.
And I told him straight up, it's like, if you want to go, go. You know, we have our core values here. We're going to live by them. And if that's not an issue for you, then you go ahead, you know?
Right.
And so for the first time in a long time, and I'm literally some of this happened yesterday. For the first time in a long time, I'm staring down the barrel of this division. And, you know, I'm going to have to go to my guys today and basically be like, hey, what do you guys want to do?
Right.
Because, you know, we basically lost 75% of our sales in the last 2 weeks, our future sales. Right.
Yep.
And we've got this solar division growing and everything. But what do you guys want to do? You know, because, you know, we have one top producer and the other two are just kind of doing average right now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I guess what I wanted to point out is it's not all rainbows and sunshine when you operate by your core values and you truly believe in them, you know, when they're not just pretty pictures or pretty words on a wall. And so now I'm dealing with, I probably just lost in the last couple weeks here around $700,000 to $800,000 annually from that division because I didn't agree with what my director was doing and I didn't want it to be part of the company. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So now I've got to go and grind and figure that part out. I've either got to go all in on solar or I'm going to have to rebuild this division from scratch. And you know, too many times when I see posts about core values, you know, they say, oh, it was tough for a little bit, but it got so much better after, you know, I hired and fired by core values.
Right.
No, I think I'm going to be in this for a while. I think the next 90 days are going to be very, very trying for me. And, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say the last couple of days I questioned that decision. You know what I mean? To cut him
loose. For sure, brother. I mean, that's tough. That's tough. But here's the thing. You know, if that's what you guys are about, though, this is not just what my company's about, but this is what I'm about. Yeah, it's going to cost $700,000, $800,000 this year. Mm-hmm. The reality is, though, 2 years from now, you make the same decision, it's going to cost you $2 to $3 million.
Right.
You know, and so I think when it comes down to those non-negotiables, it sucks. It hurts.
It does. But
the fact that you made that decision, though, just speaks to the type of guy that you are, because you literally, there was $1 million price tag on your values.
Yeah.
And you said, I'm not selling them. I'm not doing it. And you made the decision. And for the people that see that and stick through this, those are your people.
Yeah.
You know, lose them, you know, for sure. And they weren't going to be there and get you where you're trying to go anyway, unfortunately.
And that's what I keep coming back to. I really do. I keep coming back to that and understanding that. And I do have to give credit to Mark Z, my coach.
Oh yeah.
Because when I first called him about this, I was on the fence. I was 50-50. Like, let his personal life be his personal life or whatever, or give him another chance, right? So I probably should have done this a long time ago. You know, had said 2 years from now, it would have cost me a lot more. Yeah. Well, I probably could have avoided it because I already knew some of this stuff was going on. You know what I'm saying? But he was giving me lip service, you know?
You're like,
and I was believing him. And
you want to give opportunity.
Yeah.
You want to have grace. You want to give opportunity to change. Because look, you were given opportunity. I've been given opportunity.
I know I have.
but you got to do something with it.
Yeah. And so that's the whole deal too, is I didn't used to operate this way, you know? And so, you know, and several of my people have been part of the company for 6, 7, 8, 9 years. So they know that. And they're like, oh, well, cause you decide now we're on core values, but back then you didn't care. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so that's a tough part of it too. And some people listening may be thinking that, like, I want to operate on core values, but that wasn't me a year ago. That wasn't me 3 months ago. Right.
Yeah,
they're probably saying that in their head, and you got to start somewhere. You got to draw that line. And that's the thing. You go to your people and you say, hey, I'm drawing this line. And I did that a year ago with him and everybody else. I said, I'm drawing this line. Wayne and I came up with these core values, and we came up with these core values based on where we're at now.
Yep.
Not where we want to be. These are our core values now. And so, yeah, that was the tough part of it. And I'm not out of it yet. Right. And so
it's going to be a minute.
Share that. Yeah.
I think about my team, and we rolled out core values 18 months ago. About right. I mean, so we're 6 years into this thing.
Yeah.
And just Wild West style, right? Like there's just, you know, no rhyme or reason to it from that standpoint, as far as what we're about besides the dogs. And the way that I interacted with my team 5, 6, 7 years ago, was very different from how I interact with the team today. And it has to be. I mean, gosh, 4 years ago, you know, every day, you know, we're out training dogs and it's, you know, margaritas at lunch.
Right.
You know, and the Jonathan's over here shaking his head. He was an intern when he was in college, he was an intern with us. And he's like, yep, I remember that. And it's just, it was just a time. It was just a different time. We were smaller. Yeah. And a couple of those folks are still with us. Mm-hmm. A small amount. Yeah. Because when it started to really build into something, and I'm not handling dogs every day anymore because we've got locations across the country and it's more management and oversight. And it's not just us in the backyard training dogs, right? It's changed and evolved. And it's so naive to think that we can operate the same way that we did really at any point in the past, if you're continuing to evolve and grow. Mm-hmm. And even if there isn't growth, but you're evolving,
right?
It's silly to think you can maintain the exact same policies and procedures and modes of operation. It doesn't support that, because that supported a bunch of dummies training dogs, you know, in Virginia. It doesn't necessarily transfer to Texas and Michigan and, you know, Wisconsin and all these different things. And that was tough for a lot of the team, and a lot of the team left. Because they wanted the Josh who's going to hang out every day and train dogs with them. And like, this dude don't even care. He don't even train dogs anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if I get back and start training dogs, you one probably don't have a job anymore.
Yeah. The business doesn't grow.
Right. You know, so the friends you want to come work for us because it's a cool environment, a cool place to be. There's no opportunity for them because you want me also hanging out with you and training dogs. And I don't expect them to understand that fully, But when we start expressing that why and talking about, you know, why this has to be that transition, people are either going to get excited for it because they're bought into the company, they're bought into you as leadership, and they see it, or it's, you know, he's lost his way, he's big time now, whatever right. it may be. And, you know, and they end up leaving anyway, but they weren't going to get us to where we're trying to go anyway. And that was hard because back then I'm like, man, these are my friends. They're my staff, but they're my people.
Yeah.
And they're a big part of getting us to where we are today. During that season, they were vitally important to us. And I still pray for most of these people, want to see these people win in their life. They've been gone for years and I want them to do well because I'm grateful for what they did provide to us while they were here. And what they did do and the relationships that were there, whether they, you know, want to keep that relationship or they think of it differently, that's fine. I understand all that. But for me, I know that we're not where we are today if their part wasn't a part of our story 6, 7, 5, 4 years ago. And the people that are part of our story now, particularly that have come on in the last year and a half since implementing core values and stuff like that, yeah, we lost people. People don't agree with it. But we've had a lot more people come in and we've had a lot less issues than we did in the season where we had no values and nobody really knew what we were about. It's important.
Yeah, yeah, there's levels to it too. You know,
there are some.
If I wanted to be the 28, 29 year old Doug type leader, you know what I'm saying? Then I would be stuck where I was back then, you know, and my organization wouldn't ever get any bigger than that, you know? And if I want, so two of my targets right now is 100 acres of land in Divine, Texas. You know, that's where I want to stake my family's at least material legacy, right? And another one is I want 100 six-figure earners, right? I've got about 13 or 14 right now. I want 100 six-figure earners. Nice. That's my goal. And probably by the time that I get there, it'll be two times over because of inflation.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
But that's the point. And I can't do any of that if I am, you know, getting drunk on Thursday nights and sleeping in Friday morning. You know what I'm saying? I can't do any of that if I'm not operating with integrity and saying, hey, if I'm going to run this marathon or if I'm going to finish 75 hard or live hard year and then not finishing it. Right. And then they see me do that stuff. And then hopefully they're inspired to do likewise, not necessarily the same program, but just to improve their life, their personal life. And then of course their skill set, you know, if I'm learning these new things and I'm bringing them back and I'm implementing them with them, you know what I'm saying? And hopefully I'm lifting them up with me. That's the only way I'm going to be able to create the opportunity that I want to create.
Yeah.
And the company that I want to create as well. And so it has to happen. Those hard lines got to be drawn. And then it all starts with us, you know, because if we don't do it, if we even step out of them for a day or two, then we're full of shit. Everything we say is full of shit.
Well, yeah, it's a green light for chaos.
Exactly. Because they will call you out on it, you know?
Well, for sure. How can I, if I'm, you know, for us, it's so important, you know, health and well-being of dogs, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the way we communicate while dogs are with us, you know, they're supposed to get updates every single day, pictures and videos. And, you know, we track meals, we track bowel movements, we track weight 3 times a week. Like these seem like real simple, basic, unimportant things, but they're super important. And we hold everybody accountable to that because at the end of the day, if I'm saying the health and well-being of the dog is the most important thing to us, but I let you slide by not tracking weight on a dog while it's with us. Right. I let you slide on not documenting, is that dog eating, you know, while it's with us. If I let it slide, if I see somebody mishandling a dog and I don't coach or have somebody coach and correct and guide that, and if that continues, they no longer work with us. You know, very quickly, one of those things, that actually doesn't matter. That's not an important thing to Josh or the company. Because if it was, I wouldn't get away with not doing it, right? Or if they see me with a dog not acting appropriately, oh, well, here we go. We don't need to do that. Or if I'm right. help filling in for my sales team because someone's out and I'm working leads, well, Josh didn't call that person, you know, right away. You know, that lead sat for a day.
Yeah.
I don't need to be, you know, he's telling me to be quick with these responses and reaching out as soon as possible and texting after every call and yada, yada, yada. But he doesn't do that. Now, I mean, you jump into our sales system and you see me wearing people the heck out. Mm-hmm. And that's not the best use of my time right now, but I'm going to jump in if we're short.
Right.
You have this big transition going on your AT&T side.
Mm-hmm.
You're jumping in. Like you said, you're looking down the barrel of this thing, trying right. to figure it out. But you're going to do whatever it takes to get it straight.
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm going to do because that's what leads the way. It's the only option. And if you give those variables, if you make the non-negotiables negotiable, it doesn't matter. And you're going to have massive, massive problems. Now, you mentioned the marathon. This is your first marathon, right?
Yeah, I've done a half marathon before. I weighed about 30 more pounds when I did that. So it kind of messed up my knee a little bit.
Yeah.
But how did this come about? Okay, so Zach Hawkins, he's a new Apex executive.
Yeah.
He's actually been in Entourage for a while. We met at one of the Austin meetups.
Okay.
And I think the way it happened is he said he wouldn't join Apex Executives unless I agreed to run a marathon because we had been going back and forth about 75 hard. He does Ironmans. He's ran 19 marathons. He's a total beast, right? And
so he totally set you up.
Yeah, he set me up. And I was like, you know what? Like, it. You know, I think Cameron Haynes is one of the like figures that,
yeah.
you know, he's done 100 milers and he's 50 years old. You know, yeah. I was like, why? If that guy can do it, why can't I? You know,
right?
And then I got Zach in my corner, which is, you know, exciting. And he's sending me training plans, and you know what I mean. We're sending each other screenshots of our run that day. You know, and it's just cool. Like, and only I don't know if you know this. Only 1% of Americans have run a marathon.
Yeah.
And anytime I can be a one percenter, I'm all about it. And once I saw that, I was like, oh, I'm sold.
So when is this race?
So it's at the end of the November and I'm deciding between two of them.
Okay.
I think one of them was during Jose Lopez getting married. So I'm headed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm headed out of town for that. It was during that. So I'm deciding between two right now, but yeah, they're at the end of the November or the beginning of December.
That's cool. Yeah. So I've ran two marathons.
Really? I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And a 50K.
What?
Yeah, dude. They had to take me out of that one with like 3 miles to go. They had to haul me off the mountain in the back of a gator. So I was, I guess, shoot, maybe 10 years ago. Like I was real big, uh-huh. real big. And I was like, this sucks. And I went for a run and I made it like a mailbox and almost died. I thought I was going to die just yeah. going to mailbox. And the next day I did like two or three mailboxes and
yeah,
I'm obsessive. And, I was like 320 maybe,
uh-huh.
something like that. Like a month later, I'm doing a 5K. 2 months later, I'm doing a couple more 5Ks and 8Ks. Next thing you know, I'm doing half marathons and I've probably done 6 or 7 half marathons, signed up for a marathon. That sucked. That was brutal. And then well, I did it. So I'm like, well, I can go farther. And I'm probably down to about 240. All right. Doing all this.
Yeah.
And that 50K was kind of the last one. It was a trail run in the yeah. mountains. And it's like you're literally running like deer trails.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we overnight, you sleep the night before 5 a.m. start. You're right. up a fire road up this mountain. It's pouring down rain. Water's gushing down it. And it's awesome. And I looked like the dude selling pizza the night before. Everybody else like these elite marathoners and trail yeah. runners. Little ass shorts and stuff. And I look like I'm the one delivering all the carbs. So, but we did that damn thing. And they kept checking. They're like, hey, Mr. Wilson, if this cart catches you at a stop, like you got to be done.
Yeah.
I was like, am I last? They're like, no, you're not last. I said, I ain't done. Nothing's picking me up. We're good. And I got to one of the checkpoints and mm-hmm. bro, my arms they looked like elephant legs. My arms had swollen so much. My body was just freaking out. Yeah. And they had to couldn't get my watch loose off me. They had to cut my watch off. They had to cut like bracelets like off of me. Because my arms were just swelling and freaking out. I was so pissed off, dude. I've never not finished anything in my life. And it was like 2 3/4 of a mile. And literally they would not. They threw me on the back of that thing and I'm cussing them out down the mountain. I was so pissed. I was so pissed. But man, running at that size just absolutely devastated.
It's crazy. Yeah.
My legs.
Yeah. I was 227 when I started training. And yeah. I had ran the half marathon similar to what you were at 240. And yeah, it's rough. And so I already made an agreement with Mark Z, my fitness coach. That I'm going to be down to 205 before I run that marathon. So I've got
That's going to feel good.
Yeah. I've got about another, 17 pounds to go.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to feel real good at that running.
Yeah.
Good for you, man. Yeah. 1% of people do it. Mm-hmm. 1% of people do it. It's incredible. And that was the thing that was funny with running. Everybody's like, why are you running? I was like, I don't know. No one's out here bothering me. I can just get out here and go and do the deal. Yeah. And
it's a form of meditation.
Yeah, it really was. I wish that it was something that I still found enjoyment in. But the thing is, I'll get on the tread and I'll walk run. I'll do that now. And that's been a big thing I've done this year. I mean, I got so many miles on that thing.
That's awesome.
And I got this thing, I can set like my laptop on it. And so I can go and I'll have podcasts going or music or whatever. But I cannot to save my life go outside and run. I prefer
outside.
Well, and that's how I used to be. I never wanted to be on the treadmill. I'm like, man, screw this. And
I want to see the scenery. I want to, you know, I'm out in the country where I live.
Oh, yeah.
It's all farmland and stuff like that. So I get to see the animals, the deer, the birds, all that stuff.
I don't see any of that shit. All I see are trees in Virginia. It's just trees everywhere. There's no view, man. Look, I can't thank you enough, man. I appreciate you coming on here so much. I need you to know that I love you. I think the world of you. I think that, you're a great husband. You're a great dad. You're a great business owner. You add a shit ton of value to my life. And I want you to know that. And I'm just so glad that, you know, we've connected in this past year. And I'm excited to do life with you and see what you do both with your family and professionally, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel the same way about you, man. I'm incredibly excited to see what we all do in Apex. Yeah. You know? Everybody, awesome. It feels like everybody has been on this ride the last like 18 months or so.
Yeah.
When like really a lot of people started coming in. And so, I'm super excited for what Ryan's put together for us and us to all execute on it and take over the world.
It's a cool thing, brother.
It'll be our group running the country. Maybe we'll see.
Damn right. Damn right. Hopefully, hey, we'd be in a lot better shape. How do people connect with you, Doug? How do they learn more about you and the business? What's the best way?
Oh, that's easy. TXBizDad.com or on any social media, it's at TXBizDad.
All right. Perfect. That's awesome. And just little hint to everybody or a little pro tip. If you're into barbecue at all, he's the man to follow. This guy's down here cooking up a storm and doing a great job. So I'm going to holler at you next time I'm in San Antonio, but I'm going to see you in a couple days too. In Dallas.
For sure. Sounds good, Josh. Thank you.
All right. Later, brother.